Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to get into the Cavs' big two-game stretch over the weekend. They went 2-0 against two teams from the better conference, including a win over the Nuggets, which put them at 2-0 against one of the better teams out west, and a win over the always competitive and solid Spurs. All of that breaks coming today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the Q.
On the blow block. He put him in cement boots, Colin Sexton for two.
Evan, what's going on, buddy? We just witnessed a Cavs two-game winning streak on a back-to-back, including them going into overtime with them, you know, having a shorthanded team. What was your just kind of big takeaway from this overall weekend before we get into kind of the specifics?
Well, big picture, I think daylight savings is a bunch of horse shit. I'm really tired right now. And
yeah, Elizabeth Warren was like, I'm going to outlaw this. And like, frankly, like that should have made her the unity candidate. And that ends Locked On Democratic politics.
No, it was a good run. But no, that, I thought they were going to lose against Denver for sure. And then there was a point in this game against San Antonio where I felt it looked like and felt like that Cleveland kind of running like a 7-man rotation for the better part of the last week or so. And this being a second game of back to back and both being very competitive games, it just like the Cavs are gassed. I'm like, okay, it's fine. It's just another loss. But no, the Cavs fought back. They played tough. They played hard. Four players finished the double double tonight, and Matthew Dellavedova, Larry Nance, Kevin Love, and Andre Drummond against San Antonio. And they made Nikola Jokic look pretty bad the night before against Denver. So, no, overall, a pretty impressive wrap up to this last long homestand for the Cavs hit the road for a while. What were your thoughts on this weekend?
You know, I thought getting Alphonso McKinney back quite mattered. I thought he was really good, especially I think in both games he was good, but I thought just in all instances, like he was just providing quality, usable bench minutes, and that's like kind of everything you could have wanted from him. I think that was just like a really productive bit from him. And I don't know how you can, you know, I don't know how you can like say he doesn't help. I thought it showed a lot of this group for them to just kind of basically, like if you look at Sunday's game in particular, they only basically played with seven guys because Tristan Thompson has an eye injury that I don't think we know the extent of yet. He got hit in the eye in the first half. And I don't think we know exactly what his kind of prognosis is, but I thought for them to win that game, kind of after they looked really, I thought after watching the third quarter, I thought for sure they were going to lose.
So did I. And they were outscored 41-27 in the third quarter. Like it felt like it was over by the time the fourth was underway.
They just looked befuddled by the zone that the Spurs went to, and just were kind of getting just bad look after bad look. But and they won this game again with seven guys, six guys playing the chunk of the minutes with McKinney playing a productive 19. But this is a team where KPJ has a concussion. You know, Tristan plays only 8 minutes in this one. You know, you're signing guys to like 10-day deals right now, like Sheldon Mack, who is probably like, and Sir Dominic Poynter are like around right now. And like, these are guys that don't, no offense to them, like they're probably very nice human beings, but like they just don't quite matter to what the Cavs are building big picture. And they won next game. And this is with the game where Kevin Love was only 3 of 12 from the floor, was 1 of 5 from three, was 7 of 8 from the line, which ended up really mattering. But for them to win games like this, it's just like the only like thing that I can say that makes me rationalize this is that it's just like they just are going to play harder for JB Bickerstaff and be more invested in JB Bickerstaff. And like, that is not going to be everything every time. That it, being invested in a coach is not going to make up for a coach's weaknesses in other areas. But like, it is so palpable to me that the way they're playing right now under JB, just speaks volumes to how dysfunctional it was before. And, you know, like maybe it came to maybe like that they hung on too long with Beilein. Yeah. Even though it doesn't feel like they hung on to him very long, maybe it just feels like that didn't even last. That lasted longer than it should have.
No, I agree. And I think the way you look at this, especially when Cleveland was having a very rough stretch during the third quarter where, like you said, they were a little befuddled by San Antonio's defense and were letting the foul trouble get to them a little bit. And fun fact, Chris, did you know there were 81 free throws combined between both teams tonight? So there's a lot of whistles being blown. So just wanted to share that with everyone listening. Go ahead.
I would like to just say that Evan and I are old.
Yeah.
And I you know, we're recording this because we're professionals, but you know, let's end games at a reasonable time.
For real though. I mean,
let's go. Let's speed things up.
For real though. But no, to your point, JB Bickerstaff has the pulse of this team, and if John Boeheim was coaching this Cavs squad, especially in the third quarter, they would have folded like a card table at a Buffalo Bills tailgate.
That's amazing.
It's just yeah, no, JB, for some reason, one way or another, has the pulse of this team, and I think he kind of always has ever since that first, like, you know, expose came out by Joe Vardon, Sean Strani of The Athletic, just kind of saying, like, the team players don't like playing for John Boeheim. They don't like his methodology and his lengthy film sessions, and then they noted on the fact that, like, a lot of the veteran players and other players that I'm sure you and I have, like, kind of know the names of over time, but we ain't no snitches on this podcast, but yeah, no, they deferred the JB Bickerstaff at that point. Like, they would just tune Beilein out and go to him. So clearly this is something that works. I'm trying to remain cautiously optimistic. Some of the problems that people in Memphis had with JB, where he liked to lean on veterans too much, is kind of like showing up just because it's out of necessity though. That's my counter argument to that, because like I touched on earlier when we first started recording, is Cleveland's essentially played with 6-7 man rotations for the better part of the last week, and they just cannot and are not able to stay relatively healthy. And knock on wood, Tristan Thompson's available for Cleveland's game on Tuesday in Chicago, but and then hopefully Darius Garland is back as well, and then the Cavs are relatively back at full strength in terms of rotation at least. But yeah, no, it's just I'm totally cool with how JB's coaching this team. Like, he's doing a good job. He just has a good read on the situation. And more than anything, this Cavs team that's locked in and engaged has been so much more fun and enjoyable to watch, even in losses. Like, I don't walk away from losses when we come on here to record, like, genuinely angry or frustrated, because I'm thinking, like, the Cavs just beat themselves in that situation. Like, no, JB's just kind of just making smart, logical choices. It seemed like simple, silly things, but for the Cavs, it's asking a lot, especially considering this season. But no, I think, like you said, that this Cavs team would not have been able to bounce back against San Antonio like they did. Even though they played San Antonio way earlier in the season. Boeheim technically beat them then in overtime, so I don't know.
Yeah, 2-0 against San Antonio, 2-0 against Denver. That's like not nothing. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, not at all. Sorry. Let's take a sip of water.
No, it's okay. Water's important. Hydration.
Yeah, stay hydrated, kids. Especially when it's allergy season. But, yeah, no, it was San Antonio, which is weird to say. They're probably not going to make the playoffs this year. Their 50-game, you know, that old saying, there's three certainties in life, death, taxes, and the San Antonio Spurs winning at least 50 games. Like, that's not happening this year, which is weird to say. But no, San Antonio is legitimately just a well-run organization. I'm sure if those of you who consistently listen know that Chris and I said if the Cavs could model themselves with the Spurs in terms of, like, player development and consistency long-term, like, that'd be pie-in-the-sky scenario. So, no, these are two solid wins for this Cavs squad, and hopefully something to build off of when they go on this long road trip.
Yeah, that's going to be the test of some of the good vibes. We'll talk about that more, I think. That'll be like one of the big preview points of Monday's show. I'll just say this. I just want to say the MVP as we wrap up our first segment here. Colin Sexton's MVP of the weekend, true or false?
I'd say true. Well, no, actually, no, I'd say false. I'd say Matthew Dellavedova is the MVP of the weekend.
We're going to talk about Deli in relation to some stuff at the end of the game, but I think there's an argument for that. I just think it's Sexton because here's his night against Denver. 11-19 from the field. 104 from three, 2 of 2 from the line, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 6 turnovers, we're at a +7 in 25 points. And then against San Antonio, hits the 2 big free throws, but is overall 26 points, 8 of 19 from the field, 1 of 5 from 3, 9 of 11 from the line, 4 assists, did have 7 turnovers. So the turnovers were overall kind of a bit of a problem for him in both games. But I think just in terms of him engineering a lot of what worked, and I know I thought that the foul he drew, I don't remember at this point if it was, I think it was end of regulation, but he gets past Jonte Murray, who's longer, good defender, draws so the good. Foul. Like, you just saw him do some stuff that you're just like, oh, like, you're figuring some stuff out. And again, the turnovers are an issue. You know, the Cavs maybe win these games a little easier if the guy who's handling the ball a lot for them just don't turn the ball over as much. Don't at me if you're annoyed at that, because Zach Lowe said it, and Zach Lowe is like much smarter than me. But if you just look at Sexton, I think just he engineered so much this weekend, and I think he's just because of the volume, I think he gets it.
Yeah, but I don't know, man. We're gonna touch on Dele in a minute, but like Dellavedova put together 2 solid games for Cleveland in like a pinch start situation, and you know, shout out to JB Bickerstaff. He's kind of just somehow pulling life out of Dele again when I kind of thought he was absolutely cooked this season, but he's shown flashes, and like it's like a flickering light, like a dimly flickering light bulb. It's not like a lightning strike type of flash, but it's something. It's like there's actually a pulse when you watch Dele out there playing nowadays, which is weird to say with how this season's gone for him.
Yes. Here's a trivia question for you. So the Cavs had 4 players put up double-doubles against the Spurs. Mm-hmm. Evan, do you know offhand, or Evan, I'll say if you get it within 3 years, I'll give it to you, when the last time that happened was?
I'm just not even going to bother guessing. I'm
just giving. No, you have to guess. You have to guess. Just give me a year.
Is it in the 2000s?
No, it's 1990. I wasn't alive. I don't think you were either.
It's either 90, 91, or 92. So I'm going to go with 91.
1990.
Okay, well, you know what? That's actually kind of impressive. So
that's like wild. That's just like one of those like random things that maybe doesn't mean all that much, but like it's just like very, it's cool. It's like a cool stat more than anything else.
Chris, if there's a bar that hosts Cavs Trivia Night, I am drafting you for my team, and I'm just going to plant you front and center and just say...
Here's the problem. I only got that because of Twitter.
Oh. Well...
Thanks. The Cavs Twitter account is like my friend.
You know what? I'm going to grab the Cavs Twitter team and you and put you on the table and just say...
And you're just going to be like...
Win me money.
I'll take the Bud Light Seltzer, all the Bud Light Seltzer you have. And
listen, you know what? I tweeted at the account, and I was with my family Friday night. Well, I think when I said it, yeah, Friday night. And I didn't know
it must have been really good.
Well, no, it's been a long weekend. I was just like, I didn't know what to order to get the drink. I'm like, oh, I'll take a Bud Light Seltzer. Like, what the hell, I'll try. And it was surprisingly not bad. And I'm a beer snob for people who know me personally. And, like, I turn my nose at anything Bud Light. I'm like, you know what? It could be worse. And it was cheap. So I'm like, okay, it's endearing to me. So I shamelessly plug it. But
yeah,
if anyone wants me to plug their products, like Blue Chew, Manscaped, Quip, MeUndies, any of the podcast specials, I will shamelessly say I use your product, and that is an Evan promise.
Yeah, let's go.
I'll pretend to double down on the Blue Chew thing. I'll pretend I have erectile dysfunction and talk about how I need Blue Chew. And that's how we lose sponsors.
No, that's probably how we get sponsors.
Oh, even better.
Yeah, even better. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, come back for more Locked On Cavs. When you start your hiring process, you may have questions like, will you find good applicants to choose from? What about education and experience? And how will you know you've made the right hire? Indeed is here to help. Millions of great candidates use Indeed every day to find their next opportunity. You can post a job in minutes and use screener questions to help create your short list of applicants fast. Also add skills tests to your job post so you can be confident in your applicant's abilities. Their library of more than 50 skills tests ranges from industry-specific skills like accounting to general aptitude tests like critical thinking. Indeed gives you smart tools to make hiring decisions quickly and to be confident that you're making the right hire for your team. Post your job today at Indeed.com/lockedon and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting. That's Indeed.com/lockedon. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020. And we are back. And we're back here on Locked On Cavs. Evan, let's get into some of the specifics. Aside from some of the big picture stuff that we've talked about, specifically the Spurs game, specifically the Nuggets game, what are things to you that particularly stood out as kind of the big picture or just the most important things that you saw?
You and I were kind of texting about this during the Spurs game where we were just like going over things we'd like to touch on. And I think I was spitballing an idea, and then you replied and said, do you really want to talk about this? I'm like, you know what? These two games are even nice enough to talk about. And Andre Drummond's one of them. I would say this game against San Antonio was his best game so far as a Cavalier. Like, still took 2 3-pointers, but I think we're just going to have to learn to live with those at this point and stop grumbling about it. But 28 and 17 with 3 blocks, and he played with 5 fouls through the majority of the fourth quarter and overtime. Like, credit where credit's due. Hats off to Andre Drummond. He had a good night, and I think he's finally starting to get comfortable with his teammates, which is pretty big for the Cavs going forward, especially if he does plan on accepting that player option and staying with the team through next year.
What did you make of his defense?
I don't know. It's just like, because this, there are times when I think, like, sometimes when they said he committed a foul, I'm like, no, that was a block. Like, it was just good rim defense. And there's other times, like, he's just, it's still, I'm still trying to get a proper feel on it. And I'm sure you're going to pull out some advanced stats to validate.
I'm actually not this time.
Okay, well, I don't know. It's encouraging, I guess. The Cavs are kind of a mess across the board defensively, so I really can't take too much stock on whether or not Andre Drummond is like an elite defender for this Cleveland team. But the 3 blocks are encouraging, and like I said, some of those fouls felt like a little bit of ticky-tack calls that could have been just block calls or just good rim protection on his part. But, I mean, it could be worse. It could be trying to draw parallels to the last Cleveland rebuild. It could be Semi or Den, or it could be Ryan Hollins trying his hardest out there defending the rim. So, I mean, it could be a lot worse. So that's what I'm trying to go with here tonight.
Noted hot take artist Ryan Hollins, which is just a wild thing that exists in our world now. But okay, so here is I think Drummond overall, this was I would say Sunday's the best performance he's had since coming to the Cavs. Mm-hmm. 28 points, 17 boards, had a really, really good offensive rebound late in regulation to give them lead. Sexton like should have got fouled, but Drummond did the smart thing and like kept following up and played through it and didn't just assume that Sexton got fouled and put a bucket that was good. I think if there's one little nitpick I would have with his game on Sunday is that I felt like particularly it stood out when Rudy Gay hit the game-tying basket. Drummond just like didn't put his arms up. Mm-hmm. And like that's just like just at least put your 6'11 arm in the air and defend that. Like that's just like a basic kind of effort thing.
You think that was him trying to avoid drawing a 6 foul just because
that's possible. That is extremely possible. I think it's just like I think that the little stuff with that, it's just that's where I'd probably say like, the only thing I didn't feel good, that and the threes are just like the things I don't like love. But considering he had to play through some of that, you're probably right, considering it's a close game, considering like he at least was there. The foul thing might be accurate there because like considering like I don't know what you do if he fouls out, you know, like he didn't play like a significant amount in overtime, but or at least wasn't there at the end, but you know, he played 33 minutes still, and like, you know, what are you getting Dean Wade or are you getting Zizic, like, what is the move if Drummond were to foul? That's a good point. I should stop being a hater so often. I just think Sunday sets the template for what you want from him. Offense, crashing the offensive glass, getting defensive rebounds, and I think just kind of feasting in the way he did. I think maybe that it's it's kind of the hope that this is building towards something future. And I hope that we don't see him twice out of every seven games going forward. I don't like have any read on like what the calf issue is or anything like that. I think that's, we got to see how, if that calf injury is going to hamper him, but I think if he's healthy, and he's good, I want to just keep seeing more and more of Drummond, because I do want to just get everyone more reps as the thing. Evan, the other thing for me that I think is interesting is, while I think JB's done a great job, if there's one thing that I would wonder, and I'm stealing this from Twitter, because I've seen a couple people tweet about this, but I don't know if just leaning on seven guys is like what I would have done.
Yeah, no, I agree. And
let's just pause. Like, my internet cut out while you're talking, so I have to, like, can you give me a quick recap real quick?
I just talked about Drummond, and then just kind of wrapped up on like that. This should set the template of like what he did, and then talked about, and then transitioned into like, I don't know if seven man rotations is the move.
Okay. Jumping in now. Yeah, no, I agree with that. And Dean Wade was out with a sprained ankle tonight, so he obviously wasn't available. And I'm not sure, because you and I weren't at the game, if Ante Zizek was even available in the event that Drummond were to foul out in either the fourth quarter or overtime, and like the touchdown in the first segment, Tristan Thompson's poked in the eye in the first half. So I don't know, maybe you kind of give Drummond a little bit of a cop-out in that situation. You could go with Kevin Love at center, and then maybe put McKinney in at the four, Nance at the four, and McKinney at the three. Just a little, maybe you have a little bit of lineup flexibility, but I don't know. It's maybe nice to have Drummond there as an option just in like defensive situations for like rebounding or shot blocking, where he may have to risk getting that sixth foul. But, you know, I agree with you wholeheartedly that the Cavs cannot lean on seven-man rotations, especially in a second game of back-to-back. And like that Denver game was like probably emotionally exhausting for a lot of those guys, because it was a tough contest. And this Spurs game was definitely tough as well. And you have two guys on 10-day deals, and you have two guys on two-way contracts. I wasn't really paying much attention to Canton's schedule this weekend, so I can't really say if Matt Mooney and, well, like we touched on, Dean Wade wasn't available because of the ankle sprain, but there's options for JB Bickerstaff to kind of lean on, just to like hopefully you put them in a situation where you feel maybe he just doesn't feel comfortable with them not completely blowing
this. That would be my guess, is that he just doesn't trust like those guys to play minutes. And you know, it's like I think there's something to it, and we're gonna talk about this in the last segment, but like, well, number one, they did play on Saturday in Erie, so like maybe the Charge guys, kind of looking at this, like, you know, maybe so Mooney in that game, I'm pulling this up, Pointer played 23 minutes in that game. Mooney played 33. Okay. Sheldon Mack played 28. So like maybe you just like have guys that you just like don't feel as if like you can, like maybe you're just worried about their workload. Maybe they're not coming with you on the road trip, and you know, I can't like
really disheartening.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the deal is. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's just like play McKinney more. Like, it's the second night of a back to back, and like that's just physically demanding. You know, we'll see what happens with Garland. You know, we'll see what happens with KPJ. It's just like you're gonna need, I think, another body or two. And the Tristan part of this will be really interesting. We don't know what his status is gonna be. And again, they're about to go on a 6-game road trip, and they're going to be away, and it's stuff's going to kind of add up, and
yeah, hopefully
they only get one day off before they're back playing on Tuesday in Chicago. So it's not like they have like 3 days before they get to rest up, and then I think they get a little more time. But it's not like this team is going to like have a couple of days to really regroup after this. And just so they go Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, so they basically have a day off in between games. They go Tuesday, Friday, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So basically, like they play Tuesday, they get 2 days off, they play back to back, then they play, they get 2 days off again, and then they play twice. They basically play every other day, and then get like a couple, like three days off in between, or two full days off in between their next game, which would be at home, as they get into like the real back end of the season. But like, this is going to be like a time where they do kind of get some minutes, and just kind of seeing how some stuff really works out will just kind of be the key there. Last guy I just want to touch on for these last couple games, Evan, Jedi Osman. Okay, so against the Spurs, 6 of 14 from the field, 4 of 8 from three, 6 assists. And then against Denver, had 20 points and then 5 of 6 from three, 7 of 12 from the field, 3 rebounds. I feel like as he's having like an underratedly like solid season to some degree, but you're kind of, you've coined this thing better than anyone. He's very up and down. But what did you make of Jedi this weekend?
He got out of his valley pretty quick, because if you really want to look at the stretch overall, it started back when Cleveland played Utah on March 2nd. He had 14, 5, and 2, which granted is underwhelming, but if you look at the game before that against Indiana, he had 8 points, 2 assists, 1 rebound, and then he scored in double digits every time since. But he's starting to reach maybe the peak of his peak again, where he had, like you said, 23-1 against Denver and 19-4-6 against San Antonio. And I like a lot of what Jedi has in his game. I think I like him as a facilitator and just kind of like he's good at moving the rock. But it kind of remains to be seen what exactly his role will be going forward. And I think the luxury of having Alphonso McKinney back, in a sense that if Jedi does have like a rough night in this upcoming road trip where he kind of just enters the doldrums of being Jedi again this season, you can kind of lean on McKinney a little bit, because McKinney's solid overall. Like, he's not like going to be playing like meaningful, like 40 minute nights like Jedi has over the last 4 games. I mean, roughly it's 39 minutes against Utah, 43 against Boston, 38 against Denver, 37 against San Antonio. But, no, like, if Jedi is having an off night, you don't have to keep him out there to the point where it's like a detriment to him missing so many shots and him just like kind of losing his confidence and losing his faith. And maybe you just kind of put other people's and players in these situations just to kind of spell it and ride this wave a little bit of the Cavs playing really good basketball. And but overall, no, Jedi's kind of back on his high again, and hopefully this one's a little bit longer than the last one, and then I just don't think it bummed out when I see him just have a frustrating night. But I'm not trying to be a doom and gloom guy here, even though that's what I come across as, but it's going to be inevitable, and Jedi's going to dip back down again, and it's going to be kind of just like a sad time overall, but I'll enjoy it while I can.
Yeah, just I'll note this, for the year, he's playing a little bit less overall, but he is, and he's shooting a little bit better overall. 44.2% on 9.2 attempts per game. He's shooting 38.5% on 3 coming into tonight, so that'll change a little bit. But it's on the same number of attempts per game as last year. So there has been like a, and it's about half a 3 per 100 possessions. So it's like functionally like about the same amount. And Jedi, like that. If that's like a real thing for him going forward, that's like probably the biggest development you could want from him this year. Amid all the other stuff, like a lot of his other numbers are the same, everything like that. Like, there is at least stuff that I think you should feel good about with him. And I think just the shot making for him overall, and just him staying on the floor, at least kind of being poised enough to take those shots. And I think the cutting we've seen from him and Deli in particular of late, just kind of darting into space and trying to get shots off, I think is a really smart little development. Okay, one last break. We'll come back, talk about Deli, talk about some other stuff on this episode of Podcast. And we're back, Evan. Okay, so Matthew Dellavedova has played as a spot starter the last 2 games. Darius Garland's out with a groin injury. We know that you and I have talked about how we're not sure how good Deli is anymore. We're not sure what he has left in the tank. I still think those are fair criticisms. But I got to say, he's been downright impressive. And I think there is something that he provides in terms of stability, in terms of veteran leadership and all that stuff that is cliche and whatnot. But if you just watch what he's doing on the floor, I would recommend, like, if Garland doesn't play or whenever Deli next plays on, perhaps on Tuesday, Deli is just like constantly like pointing stuff pointing stuff out, kind of getting guys in the right spots. Like, there is something to that, because he's it's not what Kevin does. It's not what Drummond does. Dele's just kind of good at that and kind of being a leader on the floor. It's why Beilein quite liked him. It's why coaches forever have quite liked him. And if you look at him, just compared to Garland, like, he just has the ability to do that. He has the kind of clout, I think, with guys like Kevin to do that. And if you look at just the other stuff he's doing, like, he had a really nice bucket where he cut into the lane just from the three-point line because he recognized an opening. Like, he understands how to take advantage of that stuff, even though the athleticism isn't the same and whatever. Mm-hmm. He had 14 assists against Denver, and then against San Antonio, played 45 minutes, 11 assists, and 14 points, and had hit Kevin with a pointer, hit Kevin with a really big pass that I haven't seen Kevin smile that big in 9 months. He's been really good. And, like, is there anything to, like, Dele just being helpful in a way that we probably didn't acknowledge?
I think at this point that it's hard to believe he's only 29, because Dele feels so much older than that. But maybe it's because he became a father and, like, he's just really embraced that whole dad energy and aura to him. For those of you who follow Carter and RG, you guys know what I'm talking about. Ever since he became a dad, like, he's become a lot grumpier. But, Dele mentally still is sharp as a whip. And I spoke with him before the season, and he touched on the fact that he's aware of the fact that he may not play meaningful minutes, in the fact that scoring-wise, and the way I understood it, was that he was going to be kind of squeaked out of the rotation in Tyler because of Sexton and Garland and Porter and Windler at the time, who we thought was going to be healthy and active. And then, like, you fast forward to when Cleveland traded Jordan Clarkson to Utah, they bring in Dante Exum. Like, that definitely felt like it was, like, the death knell for Dele's time in Cleveland, and it's just going to kind of come to an end, and he'll either sign with a team in free agency or maybe play somewhere in a different league or whatever, or just kind of ride and wait. I feel like, and just long story short, Dele's a very smart and cerebral player, and I think he's taken a lot of, like, what he's learned in his time playing with championship caliber teams, like, and players like Milwaukee, or playing for those championship squads in Cleveland, and, like, being an overall pest to Kyrie and just kind of getting a name and reputation for himself for being just a scrappy, tough-nosed defensive guard. And physically, he may not be able to do what he was able to do his first time around in Cleveland, or to an extent before injuries kind of sucked away a lot of his athleticism he had in Milwaukee. And that's fine, but, you know, it's just been kind of really awesome, in a sense. I was just, like, a fan of the way Dele plays and just, like, how endearing he became to this city during those NBA final runs, and how much, like, the fan base loves him overall. Like, it's just really nice to see him have, like, two meaningful games back to back. We had a career high in assists, which, you know, is a huge thing to him. And then against San Antonio, again, was solid. I mean, his shooting was awful. He was 3 of 11 from the floor, but he had 14 points and 11 assists. And those 11 assists were huge, and the 14 assists against Denver were huge. And I think he's going to be best used down the stretch, because I don't know when we'll get Dante Exum back, really. I don't know when Darius Garland will be back, but I feel comfortable in the fact that if you're able to pair Dellavedova in maybe not 30 to 40 minutes a night like he's been playing lately, but maybe he kind of beats out Exum no matter what, healthy or not, in the pecking order. Just the fact that he's such a cerebral player, and he kind of makes the right reads on defense, and he helps these younger guards, like, get in place and just figure out where they need to be and learn on the fly. Like, that's invaluable coaching on the floor that, you know, JB Bickerstaff has an impact, but to have an extension like Dellavedova like that, I think that certainly helps. And that's kind of why I make my case for him being MVP, because I think he was just a big part of these two really big wins for Cleveland heading into this long road trip.
So what would you want to see from Darius Garland when Garland gets back? Because Darius Garland is going to play. Even if there is some intangible benefit of, like, having Dele out there and getting Dele minutes and all that stuff, Dele is not a part of the future in the way that Garland is. The Cavs invested a high draft pick in Darius Garland. Matthew Dellavedova's contract is up at the end of the season. They're going to play Darius Garland. Darius Garland's probably going, I would just vastly assume, is going to get his starting position back. There's no reason to think he's not going to.
Yes.
you certainly saw hints of him being the passer. I thought one of the things that surprised me early on with him at the beginning of the year was his passing and kind of filling in that playmaker role. Mm-hmm. But when you think about him coming back and kind of how things have gone with him on the bench, what would you expect to see from him kind of going forward? And what would you, I guess, want to see from him when he comes back?
Well, I feel like it's a bit of an overreaction. I'm sure everyone who's listening and like follows the scene closely knows what I'm talking about, how somebody said that the team is 1-2 without Darius Garland. Their first win came against Denver last night. So I think, you know, like you said, Garland is definitely going to be back in the starting lineup when he's back. There's no reason to bench him or punish him in a sense just because he was injured, and even if the team is playing well. But I guess Exum is just kind of the factor here, where maybe Bickerstaff just kind of tinkers with the rotations a little bit. He starts the games with Sexton and Garland together, and he pulls Garland first and lets Sexton operate as the primary point guard and let Dellavedova serve more of like a stopgap and just a security blanket for Sexton. And then maybe towards the end of the first, beginning of the second, you pull Sexton and put Garland in, and then you just do the same thing. And you just kind of ride the storm a little bit and maybe let your guard just kind of act as a security just to help them maybe continue. Because let's be frank, like Colin Sexton's shown a lot of encouraging growth in this homestand. We're like, just in terms of playmaking and vision, like you and I, again, like you and I both said, like that game against Boston was some of the best reads and passes Colin Sexton's made of his entire career. Maybe, I don't know, maybe having Dellavedova out there helps a little bit and just kind of like coaching him through it and like working through it in practice and everything. But I don't know how much stock you can put into it. But yeah, no, you can't. I think it's absolutely insane if you think, like, if Darius Garland comes back, you bring him off the bench and you keep starting Deli, because I also have the fear, like I said, he played 45 minutes tonight against San Antonio. He played 31 minutes the night before against Denver. For the most part, Deli is fairly washed for this season. Let's just put this in perspective. For the year, he's averaging 2.8 points, 1.3 rebounds, and 2.9 assists, and isn't shooting very well from the floor to begin with. So, like, this is a nice, like, renaissance, if you want to call it that, or just like brief revitalization. But I have a fear that Deli is going to come crashing down soon, so I feel like it's just going to kind of be okay if you pull him and let him just kind of play a reserve role in less meaningful minutes going forward. But I don't know, maybe it's a bit of a situational thing too. If it just kind of works out, like JV's fully comfortable with playing players that are hot at the moment and just rest like sitting guys who aren't, and maybe Dellavedova's kind of earned a crack, kind of like Larry Nance and Tristan Thompson have off the bench as well.
Yeah, I think Deli should probably continue to play a little bit. I think you just got to have him just play some minutes. I don't think 31 or 40-something is tenable, but I think him just getting like 20 minutes a game, playing with Garland.
Yeah, I'd say about 20.
And I think just like as much as like he is, again, not someone that's going to matter next year, probably like that. Like we have no idea if he's going to be in the roster or not.
We don't know. The Cavs throwing him a bone by saying like he's the fourth security point guard for like he like break the glass during in case of emergency kind of situation. But that's the only way I'd see him like being with Cleveland next year.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. You know, I think it certainly, like, I don't think that could hurt. I'm pro, like, giving a veteran money to just kind of help lead things. Like, I think those kind of deals are, like, kind of underrated. That's why I liked the Channing Frye signing last year, even though, obviously, I don't think that worked out exactly how everyone wanted it to. But, yeah, I think I'd play him, and I would try. I just think there's something what he does that both Sexton and Garland could learn from. But I think with how the team is structured right now, that is the avenue I think where Garland's impact could really be felt. It's Sexton's obviously doing his thing. They have to worry about Drummond's touches now. You have Kevin Love you're worrying about. Like, I think that is the avenue for Garland to make an impact in a way we haven't seen yet. And I think that's the way to go forward with it, is just find a way for him to do some of what Deli's doing. Evan, as we get out of here, any final thoughts?
Somebody pointed this out to me earlier, but Chris, do you know how far back Cleveland is in terms of record on Chicago right now?
I'm going to guess like 2 games, 3 games.
I think it's 3.5, but I'm pulling it out now. Per Tankathon, Cleveland is currently...
Oh, you're correct. They're two games exactly behind Chicago, and Chicago is currently has the seventh best odds of getting the first overall pick in the draft. So I don't think Cleveland's going to jeopardize their draft position, but it is something to keep in mind because the lower the Cavs go in draft order, there's a better chance New Orleans could get their pick if it falls out of the top 10, which would definitely suck for this season if like the Cavs put together a string of wins and they don't get any draft compensation out of it.
Yes, just so people know, if they were to have to fall, if they fell to like where the Bulls are, and the Bulls are seventh right now, mm-hmm. there would be a 1.3 chance they could lose the pick.
It's still a chance, man. Just
no,
saying.
I agree. I'm saying it's like lower, and it's really if you fall back like to like the Wizards Charlotte range, which is probably unrealistic. That's the thing. Yeah, I think if you fall any lower than that, that's where it gets a little dicey, because it's just like, what are you doing? But I think if you're like kind of, if you start flip flopping with like Minnesota or like the Pistons and you don't fall even further back, I think that's okay. Cause yeah. It's just like, whatever. But I think seven is kind of the worst you want to fall, just kind of looking at that. Well, I mean, that's actually closer than I would have guessed. I mean, they're only 3.5 ahead of Charlotte for eight. So, well, Who would have thought?
The Cavs. Oh, hey,
if,
but they
if
also
if that happens, match. David Griffin's just like I would just think David Griffin is just, you know.
When New Orleans was in town, he was walking around like he owned the place, so maybe he knows something we don't. So
yeah, he knows where the good vibes are buried, so to speak.
Oh, there we go. I like that.
He doesn't seem like a guy that bury bodies, just good vibes and culture. And good bottles of wine.
There you go. Although, hey, on a positive note, the Cavs matched their win total from last year, but it took them 64 games this time. So there's
that's called progress, my friend. Yep. Who said this team wasn't a bunch of winners? All right, that's going to be it for today's show. We'll be back tomorrow talking about more things Cavaliers. For myself, for Evan, it's been Locked On Cavs. We'll talk to you tomorrow.